Seven Tones. I'm Seth Bosted. We just opened the program with the first movement of a piece called Neat Suite, and it is movement one, Fast. We heard Lynn Bechtold, Funda Cisnisiolu, and Mark Zaki on violins. Music of Gene Pritzker, who is my guest. In fact, I'm in Gene's home. Welcome, Gene, to your home.
Thank you for having me in my own home.
Thank you for hosting me. This is kind of an unusual thing to do a Relevant Tones show. I mean, I usually do them on Zoom, as I told you.
But that's boring. Come on.
That's boring.
The pandemic's over. Everybody's
That's
good.
Right. Much Everybody... more fun to bike cross town and chat with you in your own not-so-neat suite. I'm just laughing because we're in your own musical room here, a neat suite, although it's kind of an unneat suite. It's full of all of your musical memorabilia over all the years.
Yes, but I know where everything is here.
Everything. Even scores from 1995.
Well, yeah. Those are the ones that I haven't... 95. No, 95 are on my computer. But like, 95 could be in there.
Well, you have more scores printed out here than I have. I mean, I'm really at the mercy of my computer, actually.
Me too.
Most everything's digital.
No, I have everything digital, but I do have some old scores from, like, maybe early 90s that I want to one day put into the computer. But, you know, you got to find that time. Who the hell has that time?
Who has the time? I know we need an intern for that.
But also, this is just... composer, if you guys are listening, make sure you just have all your scores on an external drive. I have all my.
Oh yeah,
on a Google Drive. So
and back
if your computer does die, you have it in.
I put them on a hard drive, my computer's hard drive, a Google Drive, and I email them to myself. I'm totally crazy about it because I don't want to lose anything.
Well, Seth, I have 977 positions,
know.
So email would be a little hard.
You have 900. You have you have 780 pieces more than me.
Okay. So yeah, I have it's like a 4 gigabyte file. So it's
Well, I'm pretty excited about your first album. This is your first album you've ever released. Right? Congratulations. It's really cool. It took you a long time.
That is wrong.
To get around
that is
to
false
it.
Information. Fake news by Seth Bosted.
Oh, I'm full of it. I can just crank it out, man.
Okay, this is I've lost count of the albums I have. I'm sure there's a number,
but it's a new album and it's string music. And as you say in the blurb for the album, string music is, I mean, you're a string player, you know, it's very near and dear to your heart.
I do. But basically, I produced a whole bunch of concerts called Gene and the, I think I started with, it was like Gene and the, it was Gene and the guitarist, Gene and the percussionist, Gene and the clarinetist, Gene and the brass, Gene and the trumpets, Gene and everything. So, and I used to do them actually at LPR. A bunch. Then now, I've done a few recently in various venues. I just thought that's a nice, because you know, my next album could be Gene and the whatever percussionist, because I have music for a lot of music for certain groups, any groups of instrument basically. So I started off with Gene and the strings, just because some couple of the pieces on here that are brand new recorded, and I wanted to put them somewhere. And I thought that would be a cool. One of them is the Macha Kozawa, which we could, I don't know, talk about.
Yeah,
I don't know which piece. But she recorded Tango in V.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really nice recording we did. And I just wanted to see where I could release it on. And that was kind of the impetus to get this album going. Tango in V, it has three movements. And one is called Vivaldi, one is Vaughan Williams, and one is Verdi.
Ah,
so each one is a solo violin tango, but based on a melody of those composers. She, for a long time, thought it was called Tango in 5.
She's got that whole Roman thing going.
She was like, why is it Tango in 5? They're all in 4-4. Like, what? Like, what are you asking? I don't know what you're talking
There's only three of them. Well, let's go that direction. Let's play one of those.
Yeah, so this is Tango in V. This is the one that she plays the most, and we've played it everywhere. It's Verdi. No, it's not Verdi.
Vivaldi?
It's Vivaldi. Thank you.
So you were talking about, while we were listening to it, because we are listening to these in real time with you, you were talking about using techniques that are part of like tango violin playing.
Yeah, yeah. There's all these great techniques like arrestre, where it's like you have a, it's like two tight, it's a tight note from an upbeat to the downbeat, but there's a, the arrestre is the accent on the downbeat, so yeah. There's a lot of that stuff, that this yeah. In the string music, right, it's a like called arrest, and there's notation for it. I mean, simple notation with just a tenuto accent and thing, but it's, you know, if you put it, they know how to play it. And then there's all the effects, like the chicharra, which is a chicharra, I forget what it's the frog. And you're playing like on the frog, like that type of thing, you know, and other movements have some other things. But there's, I just researched a bunch online, and some had notation already that I use, some have to like just, you write the word or whatever.
Okay.
But some and not all string players know it. So Machiko happens to be a tango.
I was just gonna ask.
Yeah, exactly.
She can notate it, but if she doesn't know it,
no.
I mean.
So Machiko happens to be a tango expert. Like that's her. She's a classical violinist, but she's on my record label, Composed Concordance Records, which by the way, the album's on. But she has she's our number one seller because she has like 3 Piazzolla albums. Her playing Piazzolla.
People love Piazzolla. People love
Piazzolla. Every year. She's always number one, sells the most records. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Most downloads, not records. There's no records. What is this?
Records, come on. She has a record for most downloads.
Yeah. There you go. Nice.
Where are we going next? What should we play?
No.
Let's do an ensemble piece.
Yeah. So, you know, as most of my music, the whole album is very eclectic. So there's a bunch of solo pieces. We'll play some of those, whatever. There's quartets, a bunch of string quartets that I like, mixed quartets. And then there's some hip-hop music.
Mm-hmm.
Which we'll get into maybe a little later. One piece, I don't know if you want to play this one. This one, you were at this concert. So a lot of this, some of the stuff is live. Like that was what you heard so far, studio recordings. Both those pieces, Neat Sweet and Tango, we recorded at Dave Cosson's studio. But I found a whole bunch of recordings of mine that I really like that were performed live. So Seth and I once, I think, co-produced a concert with Gabriel Prokofiev.
Yeah, the Halloween costume. Halloween concert.
Yeah,
we did wear costumes, though.
We produced the Halloween costume for a set. Yeah.
I dressed up as Gabriel Prokofiev.
He wasn't actually there.
It was amazing.
And I dressed up as his grandfather.
My English accent, though, was terrible.
It was terrible. Then we had a wolf and them.
That was great. And he introduced us to the Kahlo Quartet.
Yes.
I just saw their name and I was like, oh, wow. So Gene continued to work with them after that night.
It was just that night.
It's just that night.
It's just
okay.
That night. So they recorded this
all
piece of
right.
called Deal with the Devil. And it does say live.
Because it was Halloween.
Yep. And I don't know, it's kind of, this piece also has a lot of extended techniques. I mean, you know, like scratchy noise and all that stuff, which I use, you know, I'm a big, I don't know, this is a composer show, I don't know if I get in trouble, but I'm a little bit, not against, but I get a little tired of composers using extended techniques for extended techniques' sake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
You know what
I'm saying?
What
you're saying. It has to serve a purpose.
I love using extended techniques, but they have to be part of my musical thing. The musical thing isn't there to supply for your extended techniques.
Yeah, the piece has to have a musical vision.
Yeah,
and the techniques support that. Not I'm going to do these awesome sounds because I don't really have a good idea.
You can agree or disagree, but a lot of contemporary music that I hear, they start off with the technique. And it's like, all right, great. Now can you write a piece of music?
Right. Also using that technique.
Yeah. Do you want to hear Deal with the Devil?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I want to hear it.
Yeah. Kahlo. What's the name?
Kahlo Quartet. Kahlo Quartet. I would say they're based in Philadelphia, but that's not true because they're all over the place. But they came up from Philadelphia to New York for this concert at Kostabi World. Not last year, but the year before.
You had a piece. I had a piece. Prokofiev had a
piece
with. Well, he had a couple of pieces with him DJing, them playing.
Yeah.
I think Dan Cooper had a piece, and it was a really good concert.
It was fun.
Yeah. So Deal with
you
the Devil.
Missed out, listeners. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, you better come to a concert. Okay, deal with this.
Thank you.
I'm pretty sure that's me going, wow, at the end of the performance. It's a walk down memory lane. That was so fun. Such a fun concert. The Kahlo Quartet performing Deal with the Devil. Gene Pritzker, my guest on Relevant Tones today. And we are featuring this new album called Gene and the Strings, which you can get anywhere you get albums. Which
anywhere
is
you get.
Generally online.
Online. With the Kumbo Concordance, we have Naxos Distribution, so it takes 2 months. So the album's going to be released in August. The second, I think.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I'll be actually in Austria, and I have a big concert August 1st. So there's gonna be a lot of Facebooking that week. In Schwaz, Austria, where I go to a festival called Outreach. This year, I invited my friend Laura St. John, who's a great violinist, and she's gonna be playing with my band, Sound Liberation. But another track in this album.
Yeah, I saw her on there. And
it opens the album. I wrote her a piece called Iguana because she has a big iguana. She loves iguanas.
Loves iguanas, man.
And she did a video to it. So online, there's a video, and we released it. Within 2 to 3 days, we had 75,000 views.
And she's probably the filmmaker too, right?
She's the filmmaker. She made her own video. Yeah.
A lot of videos. Yeah.
Yeah, but we got this huge in 2 days it was 75,000. It probably wasn't because of my music or maybe her violin playing. I think it was because there was a lot of iguanas in the video and she put on some iguana.
There's more iguana people out there than we realize.
But it was a good recording, so I used that. Well, we performed the piece live, but then we did this video, which both used live and the recording, and then on the album is just the recording. But in Austria, the festival, I wrote her because I wanted to do the same piece with her there, but with my band. So then I wrote a piece called More Iguanas.
Okay.
It's the same piece, just with bass, drums, trumpet, and guitar.
And then you're going to write another piece called There's No Such Thing as Too Many Iguanas.
Iguanai.
Iguana me, baby. Iguanai. Iguani. It's actually iguani. the correct Latin plural of iguana
is iguani. Iguani. Okay. Yeah. So I don't know if you want to hear iguanas.
I do. Thank you. a super performance.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Oh man, yeah. Those double stops are like right on.
Yeah,
I mean, perfect. Right on.
She's MIDI, man.
It's hard to believe it's one instrument doing that so perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really incredible. And she's the kind of violinist you can just write a trill for. It's gonna sound good, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Not to, if your piece is awesome, but she's, man, phenomenal player.
She is. Yeah, I'm happy to work with her for many years, and yeah, we just had this amazing concert in the Joe Pub. Where she did, because my last album, my Sound Liberation album, we did this thing called Vivaldi's Hot House. And it's Vivaldi mixed with Hot House by Dizzy Gillespie. And we've been playing it a bunch, so it's fun. And we did it in Joe's Pub recently, it was great.
Nice.
Yeah. That type of stuff going on.
All right, we're going to some R&B now.
Oh, snap.
All right.
Oh, snap.
I was trying to think of something funny that R&B could stand for, but...
Ribbons
and bunt cakes. Anyway,
well,
this is my birthday every year. that's pretty much how my birthday rolls.
So I once had a concert called Gene and the Strings, and I had five violinists in that concert. So I wrote a piece for them for five violins, and it's called Lost Occupied. And the piece goes from just a straight up five violin piece, which part one, and then it slowly goes into Lost Occupied Part 2, where there's a rapper and a singer and a track, drums and bass. But the violin, the five violins are playing over it. So and Lost Occupied is one piece, but I decided on this album I'll make it two tracks, Lost Occupied Part 1 and Lost Occupied Part 2. So we'll just hear the Part 2 on the R&B part, just because I knew people are not, you know, they might like R&B, but they might not like five violin string music. So they're not going to sit through it.
On this show, it might be the other way around.
Right, maybe. Yeah. Well, we already heard a lot of chamber music, so this
That's
is something
true.
Different.
Yeah.
So this is Lost Occupied Part 2, and it features David Banks, who's my one of my favorite R&B singers that I work with a lot. I've been working with for many years. I'm the rapper, and it's Lynn Bechtel, Funda Shizmenzhuglu, and Mark Zaki violin.
There is loss, the loss we're all just occupying. Don't argue, don't try to deny it. Some help you if I catch you lying. I see you so loud, you're trying. There is loss, the loss we're all just occupying. Don't argue, don't try to deny it. I see your soul, I hear you trying. There is loss, there is loss, the loss we're all just occupying. Don't argue, don't try to deny it. I see your soul, I know you're trying. Don't argue, don't try to deny it. There is loss, the loss we're all just occupying. Don't argue, don't try to deny it. I'll help you if I catch you lying. I see your soul, I know you're trying. As time gets tight, I rely more and more on second sight. Come on, baby, make it right. We ain't even gotta fight no more. Shut the door, then the lights and pass the metaphor. We hot like the earth is cold. We cold like winter in Baltimore. We late to the game like it's night. I see through you like second sight. Don't be polite, you tell me what you thought. It'll be alright. If only a glimpse I caught of you as you walked out into the night forever. Even when the sight types too, I never expect you to sever. I guess I was not that clever. Well, whatever. We can't all see under the surface with all the kisses and the curses. Even with all the knowledge one disperses about each other. It's put away to change in verses. Don't bother to close your eyes. If you see your love turn away in hearses. You look up and blame the forces for your defective choices. And your second sight like hearing out the noises as you make the same mistakes. And drink forever since the voices. Try to deny it. Some help you if I catch you lying. I see your soul, I know you're trying.
Loss Occupied Part 2. There is loss. And what was he saying exactly?
There is loss. The loss we're all just occupying. Don't bother, don't try to denying.
Yeah.
I see your soul and know you're trying.
Okay.
God help you if I catch you lying.
There it is. I knew there was a threat in there somewhere. I was like, I'm pretty sure I felt like mildly threatened in there somewhere. I mean, David Banks is like the nicest guy ever, you know, so like.
Why are you threatening me, man?
He said, if he catches me lying, you know, he'll, I don't know, hug me or something. But, you know, so when I first met you and saw all the stuff that you're doing musically and then rapping, I thought, no way. But you're a good rapper. Like, how, I mean, how did that come about? Seriously. I'm very curious. I mean, you know, you didn't learn it at Manhattan School, like.
Well, the truth is, I kind of did learn in Manhattan School, but not, not, I mean, not.
It wasn't a class on it, or.
It wasn't a class on it, no. I mean, I grew up, when I was growing up in Brooklyn in the 80s, in the projects, Crack Epidemic, baby, it was right there. But I was more into heavy metal. I was a heavy metal kid. So I really was not into rap in the 80s, where it was, you know. But in the 90s, when I went to Manhattan School of Music, I met my friend Dave. Actually, that rap is about my friend Dave Gotay, who passed away. And me and him started this band, Sound Liberation. And he was a cellist from the Bronx, who was a rapper. And I was interested in rap, so I started writing my raps back then, too, when we were freshmen. We were in the 1990-91, freshman, sophomore. So I started writing raps, and I started getting really into it. And 90s rap is the best rap. That's for me. So that's when Wu-Tang was coming up. And Big Pun, when Dave and I heard Big Pun, we were like, oh, that was our guy. But all those cats, you know, the 90s, early 90s rap. And also, you know, Biggie and all that. So 90s was the, it's called the golden age of rap. 80s rap was still a little corny, like very strict.
Yeah,
I
mean, I love some Grandmaster, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I like that stuff, but then Rakim came, and he was like one of the first who said, you know, we could flip this shit. So he started, he basically introduced, you know, Himeolas various accents. Mm-hmm. What's the word? I'm looking for a smart word. It's not a Himeola. I mean, it's a Himeola, but it's, you know.
Yeah, unusual accents. Yeah. You know,
but basically, it's not strict.
Hits.
Yeah. To rap. And then everybody started rapping kind of like that. And then it became more complicated. And then it became, basically, he was kind of, he said he was growing up with a jazz father, was listening to jazz, and was kind of copying, like, sax, like,
oh, yeah,
like
bebop.
Yeah, like bebop type stuff,
yeah.
Or Coltrane, you know. Yeah, that type of stuff. And he's like, well, he put that on his lyrics, and the beats were still a little square, but then he started taking the, you know, this type of stuff. And so that's when I started really liking rap. I'm like, well, this is complicated. And I started trying to write this shit out as a composer studying composition in Manhattan School of Music. For me, that was the interesting part, you know. And then I started this band with Dave, because he was also studying cello, but our second passion was hip hop. So, you know, and he was a great rapper. Dave was amazing. He was just, I had to learn, you know, I'm still always feel my pocket is not where I want it to be, but his pocket was always just like right there, you know, it was just amazing. So that's, you know, that's how that came out. And I wrote like one of my first operas in my high school of music that I did, a chamber opera, and it was called The Devil and Superman. And there I am on stage, and this is a big board in the auditory where the orchestra plays. And they gave us that hall to compose to play. And what I was the first person to rap. I came out and did this whole hip-hop thing. And I got in trouble.
I got in trouble.
I didn't get in trouble, but they were like, you know, they frowned upon it, of course. But it was a written-out chamber opera, you know. And then I started...
The official response, I'm sorry, but is a frown.
It was a frown.
We hereby frown upon this endeavor.
And then I started this group called Absolute Ensemble with Christian Yaru. We started my high school music. And our first concert there, I wrote a bass concerto in which I also rapped, and it was like orchestra, chamber orchestra, and me rapping in front of it, and it was also, you know, also classical music. But I was just doing my thing, and they were, you know, they waited out the 4 years, most of the faculty, and then didn't let me back in for masters. That was my teacher loved me. My teacher Gianpaolo Bracali, who was this old school Italian guy, but he loved everything I did. Even he didn't like rap or whatever, but he. Eric, because he saw the craft, you know, my thing was all about craft. It was all about writing it out, about, you know, making what those little dots on paper make other people do. You know?
Yeah. But there's no form of music quite like classical music in terms of really, you know, separating itself and trying to, like, not allow popular influences in.
Right.
And I don't understand it. And being hostile, like you said, too. Like, well, I'm also listening to these other things because guess what? You know, 99% of the world is listening to this. Yeah. And I live in the world. But then, you know, in the conservatory environment, they're like, oh, no, shut that out. It's bad. It's negative. It's hostile. And I don't know why. It's really strange, you know, thing. I mean, how does it in any way, shape, or form negatively impact classical music, orchestral music?
Right.
You know, it doesn't.
I think at one point it was a racial thing. It wasn't just about music. It was about those people do that. You know, we don't do that.
But even as a guitarist, as an electric guitarist, I mean, they're kind of hostile towards, you know, heavy metal or rock.
No,
or...
but the guitar, but it's the same thing. It came from that thing. It came from jazz, you know. I mean, classical.
Oh,
I mean,
that's
so
true.
Even Segovia had to make the guitar, the classic guitar, an acceptable instrument. Because before that was just like for people playing
and... And you can trace back all American pop music to, you know, African American spirituals.
Absolutely,
And
I think, and I'm not saying that people who are maybe now do that are racist or anything, but I think it just became
It may have started there, though.
Yeah, and it became like, this is a thing. This is like, we are better than that, you know. But I think, obviously, in the past, I don't know, 40 years, it's subsided. And
it's changing.
Yeah,
it's changing, but too slowly, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe one of the pieces you're going to play here, because I see some of the players I recognize, but there was a concert you did at Delancey with Gilbert, I think, our friend Gilbert Galindo.
Yep.
And, you know, and it seemed pretty impromptu to me, but it was a string quartet, and you grabbed the microphone and started rapping over it, you know, and I thought, wow, that's so cool. And you've done a lot where there's a classical singer, like our friend Adriana with David Banks, you know, and I feel like those combinations work really, really well, and it's almost annoying to have to say it's classical and hip-hop instead of it's a piece.
It's a piece of music that just happens to be influenced by multiple cultures of music, multiple directions, you know, whatever. I don't know. I mean, for me, it's just, you know, I live in a world of music of where everything is melding. So for me to even talk about it is funny because it's like, what am I explaining? I mean, this is just the way things are for me. But then I forget that it's not for everybody.
Well, I think so many of our favorite artists, yours and mine, but also lots of other people, are like Charles Mingus or these players that were, you know, these composers and players that were completely uncategorizable. You know, Frank Zappa. I mean, there's so many, and after the fact, people are like, "Oh yeah, that person was amazing." But at the time, they're like, "What do we do with this guy? I don't know where to drop him."
I mean, people don't kind of really understand that Zappa started off by listening to he wanted to write like Berez.
Yeah,
he listened to Berez and said, "I want to write this," but realized
he asked for a phone call to Berez for like his 16th birthday or
something.
His parents gave him a long distance phone call to Berez for like his 15th or 16th birthday.
But then knowing that he can probably make a living on this, he said, you know, I'll start a rock band. Because everybody started rock bands as people have started.
Yeah.
So he did that, became famous, and then did whatever the heck he wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, so he was kind of smart about that. And his music is very complicated and interesting.
Yeah.
And if you look at the scores, very well written. I mean, the guy knew what he was doing.
And it's funny because we played some of his classical stuff in an orchestration class I had years ago in college, in grad school. And there was another composer in the class, and he goes, "This just sounds like his rock band stuff." You know, like he is the same guy, no matter what the idiom.
He
could channel a lot of different things, but he has a voice, a very solid, clear voice, no matter what ensemble he's writing for.
And one thing about, I mean, I don't want to make this a Zappa masterclass.
I know, this is about you, dude.
No, but this did inspire me because one trick he uses, trick, whatever. But something that I like and I use a lot is you can make it really as complicated as you want, but as long as there's an underlying groove. Because sometimes music is really complicated and you actually don't know where the complicated rhythms and sub-rhythms and subdivisions, whatever, what are they relating to. So you get bored, my brain at least, and I think a lot of people's brain, starts sounding random. But Zappa always has an underlying rhythm that you could feel.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing for me is to see how these septuplets or, you know, triplets with a quintuplet, you know, subdivision, whatever, fall over, you know, this type of thing. You know? So that's always there, even sometimes subliminal, not sometimes just like a bass recorded or floor type of thing. And you could always feel that. And, like, listen to, for those of you who don't know, The Black Page. I mean, if you look at that score, it's actually, I think actually it could be written better. It's too crazy written. It's you know, it looks like Fern and Hal to me.
Well, I mean, he started with the concept of a black page.
Yeah,
that's true.
I'm going to just cover this page with notes. Yeah. And he wrote it for Bozio, right? I mean,
for the drum, yeah, for the drums. So, yeah. But, I mean, but some of that, has like the you know, the subdivisions within subdivision type of thing.
Yeah, because that guy, Terry Bozio, could do that stuff.
He could do,
he was insane.
But he had to like memorize it because really.
Of course.
Like the mathematical thing of it is like, you know, now computers could play it, but really, if you like look at it, you have to.
So
plus, I think it would be written easier, but it's just impressive to look at it, and which doesn't impress me because when I look at Fernie House scores, I'm like, okay, whatever, but it still sounds like shit. I don't care.
I agree. I think one parameter at least needs to be constant, you know, a groove or a melody. Or a harmonic pattern. If all three are going crazy, there's nothing to
I mean, and then why you're writing this? Because I could really get an improvisational ensemble to basically play this.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Probably even more interesting.
Well, it'd be a lot easier to play too. trying to count nested templates.
No, take this.
And, you know, exactly. All right, we're gonna close this out with another string quartet piece, right?
Well, you know what? So this one, it's a. This is an interesting story.
Excellent. Let me settle in.
So I wrote this piece a while back, and it's called Losing All Hope, and it's a rap I wrote. I forgot it was for something. I can't remember for what now. But
with such a provocative title, you can't remember what it was.
But it's about. I mean, it's a cool the refrain, the rap, the chorus. It's about, you know, rich people getting richer and fucking the rest of us, and the children are losing all hope.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Luckily, that's no longer valid. But no, I'm kidding. More relevant now than ever.
Luckily, we're
luckily we don't have to worry about that anymore.
We're in perfect but anyway, the string quartet part, the rap is all written out exactly to what I'm rapping, and for that, the string I was able to write the string quartet around the rap, and sometimes we're rapping and playing together. But the interesting, that's not the interesting story. That's just more composer shit. The interesting story is I recorded all this during the pandemic. I found the string quartet on Fiverr. Do you guys know Fiverr?
I know Fiverr. I know Fiverr. Yeah.
You guys like Fiverr? So anyway, and for not so much money, this quartet.
I'm sure you paid them equitably.
No, I did not. But they live in Brazil. And they're very nice people. One of his name is Michael Bugav. That's the guy. He plays both violin and viola here. And they don't have even a name for the string quartet. I asked him, like, what should I list a string quartet? He goes, here's the names of the players. I have to put everybody's name. But I don't know their name.
Maybe the Fiverr Quartet.
Is the Fiverr? I know that'd be cool. The Fiverr Quartet.
Fiverr Quartet.
That'll be good.
I kind of like that.
Yeah. So they recorded this quartet. And it's a some hairy shit going on here. And the track... I have this track and everything's written out, and it was once played live, but
so they sent you the individual files and you mixed it.
I mixed it all up, you know, and did my rap over it.
Nice.
And I didn't lose hope. I didn't lose all hope.
No hope was lost in the making of this this track.
And I want to make a video with like I don't know, children dying and shit.
in a desert.
That's not what
in a wasteland.
I play. I do want to make some videos. I'm into making videos for things because people really like to look at shit.
Yeah, it helps.
So
put an image.
I'm gonna put some in an image
or moving images.
I'm moving.
All right, let's hear the Fiverr Quartet.
That's not their name. Losing All Hope.
Flash and laugh and show disgrace as you bathe in your
this high inflation. Us in the middle, we cool, we can cope with a shoulder, losing all hope. The world stands by and watches as the green put us all in crutches. The money and power is not a mile. As the mother cooks stone for a child, stand up, occupy your frustration. Raising this high inflation. Us in the middle, we cool, we can cope with a shoulder, losing all hope.
Children are losing all hope, y'all.
Not me. I feel more full of hope than ever.
After you're hearing positive that. Guy, man.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's nice.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. It's a hard piece, man. But they.
I know.
They recorded it pretty good. I mean, I haven't really.
And you said they had the drum track and everything, or did you just give them a click track?
Yeah. But the drum track is also too complicated to listen to.
Yeah. Right. I know.
The click is better. Yeah.
Much better. Yeah.
Just play to the click. I'll do the rest. You know,
that's a complex drum track.
I know it's very complex, but you know, that's what we do. So Gene and the Strings, we stringed it up.
But the album comes out August 2nd, right?
August 2nd is going to be out. All
right. So Gene and the Strings, look for that.
16
not
tracks.
Not on Bandcamp.
It's not on Bandcamp. Sorry.
That's everywhere else.
I mean, maybe it'll be, but I don't know. I feel like every time people buy in Bandcamp, they're like, I don't know. Like, you can get it for free. Why are you buying it here?
Yeah. I always just put a dollar. You know, it's just a suggested $20. I go, I'll do a dollar.
Here's a dollar.
No, I'm kidding.
No, when I used to do Bandcamp, I have people who actually bought, and they for the full, like, whatever, it was $20 value. I'm like, oh, thank you. But
yeah.
I feel like I should give them something else. So I come over to their house with a six-pack of beer.
You're already giving them the gift of music.
Exactly.
What we do has value. Anyway, Gene and the Strings out August 2nd. Look for it, make a note, get it, listen to it. And I mean, there's like a million other things that Gene has done on Spotify. So
there's a lot of stuff.
If you're listening in Chicago, it's Gene Pritzker with an S, okay? So don't get excited. You know, it's not J.B. Pritzker's grandson.
No,
anything.
But I think I'm related to them somehow. They just
probably. It's probably the spelling money. Got changed down the road. But all my Chicago friends are like, Pritzker?
Ugh.
Pritzker? Will he be on my board?
Yeah, say, sure. Gene would love to be on your board.
He'll be on your board. Yeah, you're right. Exactly. Will he be on my board?
Right.
Gene wants to know how much it pays. No, he pays us. That's not going to work out.
That's not going to work out for anybody.
Well, Gene, thank you for hosting this podcast. That's your music.
Thank you for having
super fun.
Me. It's my place and your podcast.
And for those of you listening, Gene and I do a ton of things. He is the guiding force behind Composers Concordance, but I'm an associate director,
right.
And they play a lot of my music. So if you're in New York, look out for Comp Chord stuff. Mm-hmm. And we have another podcast called Composers with Drinks, Listening to Music.
Which is not unlike this one right now.
Right, exactly. Which is also a very descriptive title. We do exactly what the title says we do.
Exactly.
And we have guests. And that's all I got. Enjoy. Welcome. That's the end. This is the end. Thank you for listening.
Welcome for coming.
Thank you for listening to Relevant Tones. All right. Check it out. Peace. Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. Find out more at acmusic.org. On behalf of Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening.